just to have somebody give their opinion rather than, you know, doing dumb shit
and learning
and
the hoping
nobody finds out about That's it. Right. And now I spend a lot of time looking at people's credit and I know they were doing dumb shit because I've done dumb shit. So I recognize it.
Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes sales sexy again. I'm Rachel Pitts, mom, wifey, and realtor with BRG, turned mortgage loan officer with U.S. Mortgage.
I'm Gina Tremarco, founder and a sales trainer at Pivot 10 Results, and improviser, comedian at Carolina Improv. I feel like I needed to put more adjectives in there to keep up with Rachel. I'm a trainer, I'm a comedian, I'm a dog mom,
I'm a dog mom now.
You're a dog mom now. I was thinking about that the other day. I'm like, I remember those moments when you'd come over and you're like, not crazy about dogs.
Totally not. I was not crazy not about, crazy. I would never imagined that I would be picking up and examining a dog's poop. And now it's part of... It's multiple times a day, frankly, as you might know if you're a dog person.
If you're a dog person, you know these things.
I think a new platform of mine will be pick up your dog's poop.
Oh.
People that don't, you know?
I know it's a whole different world of things like that you're learning that I'm like secretly, I'm like, oh, wait till she gets to that point of dog life.
Oh, I ordered a sign off of Amazon that's going in my yard. Literally, that says... Please pick up your dog's poop. Bags below for your convenience. And I have a little rig set up with poop bags that's going to hang underneath this giant ass sign that's going in my yard because somebody is leaving Tyrannosaurus Rex size poops in my front yard. And it's not a joke. It's coming.
It's kind of like those signs that are like, drive like your children live here.
That's right. This one is a... giant obnoxious sign. I got no HOA. It's going in the front yard soon.
All right. Well, let's get moving with this.
Doug will be mad. We've been bantering.
I know. Doug loves us. So today we have such a sweet, gentle soul on the show, and I love her. She's got such a great energy about her that kind of brought some calm to both of us, I think. Anita Nielsen. Anita is a sales performance consultant with over 20 years of experience in B2B sales and support. As an advocate for salespeople, she is dedicated to coaching and equipping these professionals for success. For her efforts, she was named one of the top sales enablement consultants of 2018 by Selling Power magazine. That's pretty cool. She has a bachelor's degree in psychology. I have envy of that. And a master's in business administration. I think that means MBA. She didn't spell it out, which is also even more cool about her, I think. She has that from the New York Institute of Technology. She's uniquely positioned to help salespeople adapt and thrive. We didn't get to talk about this. She lives in the Chicagoland area. I got to ping her back about that. She lives in the Chicagoland area with her husband and two teenage children. I thought that was funny that her kids are 13 and 14. Like, boy, that's...
Bing, bang.
Bing, bang, and two teens at the same time. And currently, she is trying to survive her children's adolescent years without going completely gray or succumbing to overwhelming tiger mom urges. I loved her. She's got a lot of great nuggets to talk about on this episode.
You guys are really going to love her. So let's just go ahead and get started with Anita Nielsen.
So I've been in and around sales and sales support and B2B tech for just over 20 years. And I like to say, please don't do the math in your head. And I've been really hitting my stride in my own consulting business in the past 5 years and working with a lot of sales leaders to help them do better with their organizations and one-on-one with salespeople. So that's kind of the professional background. Personal background, I am a first-generation Indian daughter to parents who really wanted a doctor. And that didn't turn out so great. So finally writing the book, I am now legitimate. So that's a tidbit you should know. So I'm super duper excited about that. Acceptance all around. And then I'm a mom to a 13 and 14 year old, two teenagers. So every day is a game of survival.
Oh, Rachel might have. Rachel might need some advice.
No,
I just need sedatives. That's all I need.
Just probably some Xanax. I'm sure that's about
pretty much.
I love the you said acceptance all around because you wrote the book.
It had to be something, right? Like, it wasn't an MD. It wasn't a lab coat, is what I used to joke. But the book finally did it.
Our daughter, she's an author.
They dug it. It worked. Exactly. Oh, she is an author now. Yes, she sure is.
Hey, whatever works. You know, I was looking at your website and I saw something about the elephant.
Yes.
Can we talk about the elephant? Because I think that's fun.
Yeah. So the elephant is kind of just in Indian culture, especially the Lord Ganesh is like the remover of obstacles. And it's very lucky. It's just a really auspicious type of symbol. I think that's in a lot of different cultures. And so it's just something that was really important to me in general. But then I started to read about this analogy of a rider, elephant, and path and how that symbolizes like the human mind. And I go into it in the book. But anyway, there's a lot of reasons I love elephants. And so it was a no-brainer to pick the little elephant guy as my logo. And then the little there's like five little spouts of water coming out. Those represent Punjab, which is where I was born in India. So five rivers.
Oh,
so yeah, I tried to have meaning. Yeah, I tried to have meaning with it.
That is so cool. What a great story.
Yeah, it's fun. He's cute. I love him.
Does he have a name?
No.
Okay.
I know. Like I change. Well, sometimes I call it Ellie. Sometimes I call it Ella. Sometimes I call it Ed. I feel like it's just whatever the mood is that day. I mean, not unlike most things.
Rachel, were you going to say something?
So I was. I'm anxious to hear about Anita's take on AI. We just had a conversation in my office yesterday about AI because I'm a huge fan. Like, I want to be able to be like, Siri, find me the average price of whatever homes in X neighborhood and the last six homes sold. Like, I just can't wait for that personally. And then one of my office mates was like, oh, but I just wait till you hear Elon Musk talk about AI and it'll scare the crap out of you. So there's different camps of what people think about bots and AI. So what's your take on it?
So I have so many different takes, but in that scenario, I think it's right. I think it's like any technology, it's how it works is like the wielder, the person who's using it is who determines whether it's good or bad. And if you've got somebody who looks at things a little bit squirrely, I'm not going to name any names like Elon Musk, but if people look at things a little bit differently, you might be scared of what like dystopia and stuff, but I feel like you, I want Siri and Alexa to tell me anything that they can, but that's the difference. I want AI to be helpful to us in our roles, like for you with the information about houses and comps and stuff. And for me, I mean, I would love it if I could say, hey, give me a quote about this, or hey, tell me what to put in my kid's lunch so she doesn't yell at me. I mean, something, whatever.
Siri won't know. Well, because that changes every damn day.
Exactly. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, you can program it with data, but it's just, you can't, the human element cannot be predicted. And so I think AI is awesome in sales as much as it helps the salesperson be more productive so that they can go out and be human. Like, you're not going to send a robot to go show your houses, at least not yet. I mean, I don't see you doing that right now. And so
not yet, VR will take that over. I had that conversation yesterday too.
Yeah, that's true. And same thing with like sales training too, right? Like VR is going to do a lot of that, but I think the impact that you have human to human, I still think there's so much value to that. I'm not here to say it's going to be for that much longer, but for as far as I can see, I still see that being important.
Well, let's talk about the human to human, because you say in your book, Beat the Bots, forget B2B, think H2H.
Yeah, B2B is our traditionally business to business. We just think, you know, we're selling technology to a business, we're selling products to a business. But I say it's so much more than that. It's not just the product. When you want to do sales and you want to do it right, it's so much more about the human to human element, which is me, the human, the sales professional, selling to either the human who's buying or the human, the teams that are buying, right? And that's what it really boils down to. I mean, a business can't really sell into a business. They're businesses, but people sell to people and people buy from people. So I think that's where the message needs to be, H to H.
So what are some strategies that you have for the H to H? Because especially with a younger sales force, that they are just not comfortable being human because they haven't been, I hate to say it, taught to be human and interpersonal. I actually just did a keynote address to a bunch of college faculty and staff on how to bring interpersonal communications into the classroom, hoping that those students will learn it and carry it forward.
No, you're absolutely right. I'll tell you a story kind of to address that. So I was sitting on a plane on one of my trips on my way home, and I was sitting with this lovely woman, and we just got to talking, which I'm sure that's surprising to you that I would just talk to a complete stranger. And we just talked about like kids and all these things. And she was talking about how her son was trying to get into this prestigious private school. He's like 11 years old or something. And he was scared and nervous, and she prepped him for the interview, and he goes in to the interview to talk to the dean, and it goes great. And the dean comes out and congratulates the mother. And she's like, "You can't tell me already that he's accepted." He's like, "No, I'm congratulating you because I see out of every 10 kids, one kid who makes eye contact." Ooh, that's our reality right now with young people. Right? They're so used to looking at screens, it's hard for them to keep eye contact. And that's what we're up against.
That actually reminds me of a story I heard today in a training session that I did at this community college that we have a contract with. And we were doing exercises in eye contact where I make them stare at each other for a really long time without speaking. And it makes them super uncomfortable. But there's a series that we go through. First, they stare at each other for 20 seconds. And then they stare at each other again. But the second time around, they each have to say to their partner, "I don't want to kiss you. And I don't want to hit you."
Good.
And so they both say that. And then after they get that out of the way, they say, "You now have permission to look at me." And they shake each other's hands.
Wow. That's something.
And then they have to like actually turn around, change three things about themselves really boldly, and then turn back around and identify the three things that were changed.
I love it. So like observation and then observation. Listening and all that. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Observation, listening. And so they were super uncomfortable with the eye contact, and we really talked it out. And someone in the session said, "Oh, my daughter's teacher has this new thing that she's doing. The first person to make eye contact with her when they came to school got a cupcake."
That's fantastic. That is some kind of genius. Some of these teachers just pull it out of thin air. Yeah, that's it.
So it's like her new thing now, trying to get them to, and it wasn't just eye contact. It was like greeting and making eye contact and saying hi when they walked into school. So now that's like the thing. I mean, hey, whatever it takes, but any other things that you think we should be doing with a younger workforce to get them better at these things?
Yeah, I think the younger workforce is, they haven't even necessarily learned empathy as much, right? I think that's another thing that screens kind of block sometimes. And so all those human, really human things like the empathy, the vulnerability, the authenticity, it's unfortunate, but I think sometimes in workplace, we have to help them learn those because they were ill-prepared by their parents or by their school, whatever it was. And it takes a lot of time and effort, but I feel like that's our only course. They're not going to learn it overnight. So we have to spend the time coaching and guiding and working with leaders to help bring that out of them. And the funny thing is when you've got these people, we talk about millennials or whatever, and how they are entitled. And I mean, I love how Simon Sinek talks about it, how it's like a failure of a generation of parents, right? If you look at it that way, you want to help them and they thrive. They thrive in that, like if you genuinely care about them. So it really, it's a hard work for leaders, but man, does it pay off and it's fulfilling.
Hey, Warners, you have probably heard me talk on several occasions about how much I love wearing red lipstick. Lipstick is just one of those things that makes me feel good about how I look. And sometimes a little extra enhancement to my lips from Dermavogue doesn't hurt either. I've known Dr. Jim Turek of Dermavogue for years. He is not only my doctor who keeps my body healthy, he and his Dermavogue team keep my face looking healthy and maybe a little younger, maybe. I mean, I love it when people say, "Something looks different about your face," but they can't really tell because that's really what you want. You want to go to a place that makes your face look as good and it makes people wonder what happened. So what's really cool about Dermavogue being our premier sponsor of this show is the fact that I'm a client, and I was a client before they became a partner of the show. So we're excited about that. Dermavogue has been offering the greater Myrtle Beach area the best in cosmetic and aesthetic dermatology since 2003. Opened by Dr. James Turek, Dermavogue combines expert medical knowledge with cutting-edge technology, bringing you the most effective,
flawless solutions to any skincare or cosmetic need. Their patients enjoy only the absolute best in laser technology, including photodynamic laser therapy, hydrofacials, and V-beam laser treatments, as well as the latest fillers such as Botox, skin peels, facials, and more. At Dermavogue, they engage you in the process of total body health to ensure your satisfaction with their comprehensive selection of the most up-to-date, non-invasive cosmetic, dermatology, and spa treatments. It's human nature to want to look your best, right? Let Dermavogue help you get there. Schedule your consultation today by calling 843-357-2444 or visit dermavogue.com and tell them that the Women Your Mother Warned You About sent you. You can also find them on our website. Go check it out.
Well, I can speak for myself as a parent that my child, she'll point out to me how much I'm stuck in my phone and my screen. And I mean, if you don't blame the parents for how the kids are, then who else is there to blame, really? The screen? Like, the parents are the teacher. That's it. I mean, teachers are at school. School was created way back when to put the kids somewhere so that parents could work. It wasn't about teaching them, really. It became later on in life, it became about teaching them something. Parents are supposed to teach children something. And I know I come from a generation where my parents didn't talk to me about sex, really. They didn't talk to me about finances. They didn't talk to me about a lot of those big items. And as a result, I got into some sticky situations with sex and with finances and et cetera. And so I am striving as a parent to reverse that and talk very openly about all those things. And I just had a really interesting meeting with a mom who, you know, started really early with her kids about credit cards. And this is your credit card, and this is how you handle it. And you know, now her kids have great credit and they're able to do stuff because that conversation was there and there's not that shame involved. And all these kids on university campuses that, you know, here, I'll give you a, somebody told me a story that they got their first credit card because there was somebody recruiting on a campus that gave them like a giant size bag of M&M peanuts.
Oh my God, for a credit
card. If they would sign up for this credit card.
And they didn't know.
And they're like, hell yeah, yeah. You know?
That's right.
And just no clue how to do it. Didn't consult with their parents about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I it was the greatest conversation with this parent of like, if you show them how to use this credit card early and show them how to be respectful of it, then hopefully they'll learn. And she said her kids are now in their 20s and they come to her about all their financial decisions.
That's awesome. And that's
just to have somebody give their opinion rather than, you know, doing dumb shit
and learning
and hoping nobody
way.
Finds out about that's it. Right. And now I spend a lot of time looking at people's credit and I know they're doing dumb shit. Because
exactly.
I've done dumb shit, so I recognize it.
Yeah. Well, you know, getting back to the college campus thing, when I was in college, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, that was the first thing that's the first thing you saw freshman year is you know, on whatever those welcome days or orientation days, whatever those days were, and they got all those tables set up trying to recruit you into different things. There were a lot of credit card companies out there, and we're talking, I don't want to date myself. Late 80s.
We're not counting.
But, you know,
I'm sure they've been doing it ever for a long time.
Yeah.
As soon as they were allowed.
Well, that's just it. Like, giving out credit cards in the late 80s. Well, I was raised by a German immigrant mother and a first-generation Italian father.
Yeah.
I mean, my father's take on credit cards was no.
No, exactly.
You pay cash. You don't have cash, you don't buy. Period, end of story. That was the extent of the education on credit cards. So I didn't get an education. I went willy-nilly with credit cards. So if I had kids, I probably could teach them better now because I've learned the hard way. But if you're not being intentional with it, well, there you have it.
Like, it's out of hand. And I love what you guys said, or what you said earlier about the parents didn't teach it. Like, my parents, I'm pretty sure my mom's skin would have crawled off if she tried to talk about sex to me. I mean, she barely could say the word maxi pad. Like, it was not comfortable for her at all. So I, of course, having been through that, wanted to be that much more communicative with my daughter, right? So I've got this kid who's like 9 years old, and I'm giving her this little book about her body from the American Girl store. And, you know, and she's looking at me like, ew, I don't want to talk to you about this. I was like, girl, get over it, because I'm not letting you go out into that world without knowing this information. So I'd much rather you hate me right now than me have to be chasing you later on, right? So yeah, it's tough, but it is, you're right, it's on parents. It's on
Well, kudos to you on that. Imagine if we went beyond talking about sex with our kids and we were talking about, here's how to be human, here's how to make eye contact, here's how to have a conversation. Let's not hide behind all the technology.
And yeah, and the empathy piece too. Like, my child recently said this, it was probably one of the best things I've ever heard. So she had been dealing with some bullying issues, which is a huge deal. And we've dealt with that. And then the other day she gets in the car and she tells me that this little girl was saying something mean about her. And she said, you know, I actually feel bad for her, because if she's saying that about me, then she must see that in herself. And oh, I was like,
I mean, that's like a she was listening. Exactly.
She was listening. She was listening. And because that's what I was trying to teach her when she was going through it before.
I just got chills from that, because that is such an amazing moment, right? Because when they're actually learning those things that we're teaching them, especially when we make it, we're deliberate about it, right? Like, I can tell you guys are too.
I mean, kids are sponges. So if you push a lot of stuff out there, they will start to mimic you.
They pick up a lot more than I realize.
Yes. And then when you find out, it's like, whoa, they were listening. They weren't just acting like they were listening. They were. And, you know, I tell you, that bullying thing is really scary. And it's going on at every single school. And I have a son who, you know, he's so nice. Like, he's just this chill dude, and he's so high empathy. And so people were kind of like picking on him. And at one point, I really struggled, because I wanted to be like, dude, stand up for yourself. But then I was like, no, I can't do that, because if I turn him into them, I'm doing him and our world a disservice. This guy has empathy. This guy has what he needs to succeed in the real world outside of school. And so that was a tough one for me. But I told him, I said, I know it's going to suck for you. You just got to suck it up and deal with it. And I promise you, what you have, people are going to be dying for in the real world. And so that was a tough thing. I know, it's insane.
And teaching the high road.
Yes. Yeah, it ain't pretty.
I'm walking on the high road today, and I want to stoop down so bad.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's hard. We know they listen, right? But so I feel like that has to motivate us.
Yeah, yeah. And that, I'm aware that she's watching me, and sometimes I reflect on stuff that I do, and I'm like, ooh, I wish I hadn't done that, because I know that she's watching it. And that's the way that it models it. But I think right now at this time, there's a lot of people out there, because of the social media phenomenon, that are super fake and surface, you know, on social media. I think people are worried about how they look on the outside. But I also think there's a flip side to that, that there's a lot of people that are in the mindset we're discussing right now that are really trying to be so much better on the inside. And improving the inside is really fucking scary for a lot of people. And that's why they worry about the outside.
And it's hard work.
In my opinion.
You're 100% right. It's hard work, right? Like, I feel like it's, when you think about working on yourself, it is a lifelong endeavor, and it ain't easy. I mean, I do it every single day. And I think that's part of what we teach, right? Is you don't know everything. You're going to be learning until the minute you're off of this planet. Mm. And I think that's an important thing. And it's actually funny. That's kind of what I teach my sales professionals too, that I work with, right? Like, guys, the minute you stop learning, AI is going to come get you. I mean, it's only kind of tongue in cheek and joking, but not really. Like, if you start being an automaton, if you stop learning, and if you keep on trying to use your same old shtick, it's just a matter of time before somebody can copy it. So yeah, I think it's very applicable. And I joke about mom MBA or whatever, but I learned a lot about how to work with people just from being a mom. That's where it got really good. And that's when I started to get really good at what I do, is when I started to apply some of those principles, because people are people. And sales professionals, they just, you know, sometimes they get a bad rap, but they just want to be heard, and they're human too. And so I think when you approach them with that, it's amazing the things that salespeople can do when they're on that right path.
You know, you made the comment about copying other people, right? Like we can look at, oh, what's their playbook? What's their strategy that they're using? Oh, she's doing that, so let me do that. And you copy that, but you might be out of alignment based on who you are. It's not your personality and you're trying to copy somebody else, as opposed to just being who you are, because that's who people are connecting with and that's who people are buying. You know, speaking for Jeb Blunt, of people buy you, right? Like they buy you, not the formula you stole from someone else.
Exactly. Not the methodology. And that's one of the things that was so important to me when I wrote this book. And I say it in there. It's like, guys, I have no checklist. I have no list of this or that. I don't have a methodology or process for you. I have a way to think. And if you want to be successful, this is how you have to think. And part of that is thinking about other people and thinking about being thoughtful and caring. And it boils down to, you know, the only place that you can differentiate anymore is who you are and what you stand for. Anything beyond that, somebody can copy. You know, so that's where you spend your time. That's where you focus, and that's what you improve upon.
Let's talk about that a little bit. You in the book, you talk about how salespeople can use the power of personalized value to differentiate themselves. So let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So personalized value to me, it's like, it's the product of really taking the time, being authentic and real, getting on a real level with your customer and asking the questions, not just about what they need for that product, but what they need as a human, like figuring out, and you know, this with being in real estate, figuring out how they need to feel at the end of this, right? Like, what is that feeling I have to get to? And then taking who you are, what you stand for, your resources, your ideas, and hitting whatever you have to get to that feeling. And so it's very much a function of the two individuals here. And that's why it can't be copied. That's the only place left to differentiate, is listening to them, understanding what they need, and then using your mind and your heart to deliver that.
Yeah. And home buying is a really... It's one of the most emotional purchases, not to mention one of the most expensive purchases that people make. So there's a lot of fear in the real estate world about AI and technology automating the process. And I've done a couple other interviews about this, and I believe that I've been working on a real estate app for the last year or so. I think automation is great, but I also don't think real estate agents are going to be completely, you know, extinct because of it. Because it's a scary process that you need someone to help guide you through, because you look at all this stuff and you have to make these decisions. And I don't think the human will ever go away. I think, you know, people that are investors would probably like the transaction to go a lot quicker, but that's because they buy homes not for emotional reasons. They buy it for profit and loss.
It's more of a transaction for them.
Yeah, it's different, and that's different, and I get that, and that probably will be so. It probably already is. But the emotional process of like imagining which room are your children going to sleep in? And, you know, the flip side of a lot of people I work with lately, that they're taking care of their 90-year-old mother. Where's mom? You know, how's that going? And all that stuff is really the meat of it.
Yes. It's the emotion
of it. Or the dogs.
No, you're 100% right. It's the emotion of it. And I think that's the part, everything else can be commoditized. As long as humans are doing the buying, the emotion's where you have to be. And if you can't understand their emotions, you certainly won't be able to speak to them. And, you know, so I was in real estate for a little while, and it was kind of the same thought process. Like, I need to be able to help them envision their future in here. If I don't know what they want that future to look like, good luck. I'm not going to be able to help them. And so I go into the whole idea of, you have to ask really, really strong questions to get that information out. And you have to make it where you go in and you be real so that you'll get the real answer. Otherwise, you're just going to get whatever script they have as a buyer to buy. Right? Like whatever they Google to see, hey, what do I ask my vendor? That's what you're going to have if you don't get to that real level pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. I like the way that, Anita, you said it's what's that feeling that they need to get to, right? A lot of times in sales, we're teaching things like, you know, what is the outcome that they want? What is the goal? But I think when you put it in that mindset of what is the feeling that they need to have at the end of the sale?
Yeah, it's one of the stories I talk about in the book, and it's just so powerful. So we did a great, I was working as an embedded coach with a team selling technology to a new CIO. And we were great on paper. Like, we knew exactly what the outcomes were that he wanted with his transformation. We knew that we had a great relationship with his team, and we did all these things, and we're like, oh, we're golden. Well, what we didn't understand is that the past year we were incumbent, the past year our service sucked. And so this is a brand new CIO who was trying to make his name. No one thought through the fact that we need to figure out how to make him feel successful and valuable and not scared and cared for and trust, like all of those things. We just thought that if we told him that we had a great relationship with his team and that we would work great with them, that that would be enough. Hell no. At the end of the day, the competition came in and made him realize that, hey, we've done this 8 million times and our service scores are this and we're not going to let you fail. Yeah, guess what? That worked. Our 20-some-year-old relationship didn't mean shit at that point, right?
Like, wow.
Yeah. So that's what it is. You have to figure out what do they need to feel. And if you miss that, you're giving up the sale, essentially. Or you might get it, but you won't get the customer for life.
Yeah. You have a background in psychology, correct?
I have an undergrad in psychology, yep.
So, and you have something, your company does something called Psych to Sell training?
Yes, yep.
Can we talk a little bit, because I'm so big into psychology.
Yes.
I keep talking about I'm going to go back to school for master's. Same. Let's talk about psychological principles that can be applied in the sales process.
Yeah. So I talk a lot about it. So it's different things. The first of them all is asking a question. So I joke about this, but you need to be able to ask questions that a shrink would be jealous of, right? Like the question, because shrinks are meant to get all the emotion out, and that's what you got to get good at. So that's part one of Psych to Sell. And so then once you get past that, now you're learning more of the things that are important to them. Now you learn what are some of the principles of persuasion. For example, Robert Cialdini is somebody who specializes in for a gajillion years, and he's brilliant. And he wrote a book, and it's very simple, laws of human nature. Like if you are reciprocity, if you are somebody who does something thoughtful and good for somebody else, they're instantly going to want to do something back for you, right? That's the principle of reciprocity. So I go into that and I take it into the context of the customer that I'm working with. And so that's another piece of it. And then there's active listening. It's amazing to me how much people forget that how you portray yourself as a listener is going to have a psychological impact on your customer. If they feel like you're not listening to them, it actually doesn't matter what you say. So that, you know, that's a big part of it as well. So yeah, so things like that, just basic human principles that when you're in the heat of a sale and you have your rosy colored glasses on, you forget and you don't think through. Understanding people's fears, understanding what's the risk at play here. And what I said before, the feeling, what feeling do we have to get to? And where are we at today in terms of how they feel? Today they're scared. Where do we have to get them to? Confident. How are we going to do that? So that's what Psych to Sell is about.
That's cool. I like to say that money is made in the silence. So shut up. Stop talking. A lot of what we do in our company is applying improv skills to sales strategy, with active listening being the number one thing that we are focusing on and constantly practicing to get them to really be in the moment and not talk too much.
Yeah. And that's one of the exercises I do with sales professionals for active listening. I give them one of them a card that says, don't speak. When you ask them the question, let them say their answer, and then shh, see what happens.
Yeah.
And inevitably by the end of it, everyone's like, whoa, you know, they kept going. Yes. Because that is what human beings will do when you let them, right? Like they want to be heard. It's a need. Yes. So yeah. And I love that exercise. It's
you awesome. Don't have to ask any more questions.
That's it. Go back to the questions a shrink would be jealous of, and then shut up. And magic will happen, right? Like that's the way I look at it.
Ask questions that a shrink would be jealous of. I'm writing that one down.
Yep.
And then
shut it. That's pretty much what it boils down to.
I'm going to tell my shrink that.
Tell him. Yeah, do it. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I've had so many of them. I've learned a thing or two about the shrinks. I'm like a huge proponent of therapy anyway. And it makes sense, right? Because like I use it in my day-to-day life.
But, you're hanging out with the right girls.
Oh, yeah. I mean, whatever. I can tell you.
I mean, my shrink has offered to pay me.
Love it. I'm not that far behind you on that. So not only have I been a huge fan of therapy forever, my best friend is a psychiatrist. So that's where I'm like, universe for the win. Thank you. Yeah. Some bonus points. So yeah, it's important. Psychology is what it is all about when we're working in sales and being parents and all those things. At the end of the day, if you can understand those basics, you'll get really far.
It's the human. You know, you said something about selling in the tech world. So can you give us a little bit of, as a woman, selling in tech, but as a woman of color?
Yeah, it's been tough. It was
like
tough.
That's a lot.
A lot of things.
It's a lot of things that you're dealing with from an unconscious bias standpoint.
Yes. Yeah, it is. And it's funny, like I wouldn't notice it sometimes just because I think I prefer to be oblivious to it. But it was hard, especially in early on, like going back to those days, early 90s, I think is when I was starting. And I think that the being Indian part wasn't as difficult because I think a lot of the programmers and technical people were Indian, right? So that wasn't as bad, but the being a woman was. I mean, it was almost always me, the only woman in the room, almost always. And so the way to deal with that is build a relationship with all the guys, right? Like, and I love one of the things you guys say, we love men. And that's why I was like, sign me up for this thing. Because I, you know, there's women that are like men haters. That's not me. I've been so blessed and so lucky to have some incredible male mentors who have literally gone out of their way to help me be successful. And yeah, I've had some shit experiences. Who doesn't? But at the end of the day, that's what I'm going to choose to focus on, right? Like, is those guys that went out of their way, they didn't have to. And they did. And I can't hate men for that very reason.
Well, there's so many men that will champion women.
That's right. You have to give them a chance.
Yeah, even if they don't understand things, they're open to understanding where you're coming from and they want to champion you and they want to see you get ahead. And sometimes what it drives me crazy and Rachel is that we do love men. And, you know, the fact that you're like, get me on that show with them. Thank you. Because we've had women who are like, well, we'll get back to you.
Oh, hell no.
And we're like, but men won't hesitate. They'll either say yes or no. And it's usually always yes. And if it's no, it's like, I'm just slammed for 6 months. Let's do it. And I mean, I kept chasing Jeb Blunt till we got him.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I bet.
And we chased him again to get him back because he's coming back to talk about his next book. And like, I'm like, let's get it while it's hot, while the fire's on.
Yes, yes. And that's it. I mean, I think we're very blessed. We have, like I told you, I'm in the Women's Sales Pros Sisterhood and I'm blessed. I've got all these amazing women behind me, but I would be lying if I said I have a ton of amazing men behind me too. It's just that I'm blessed to have these women with me right now in my career where I'm at. But to get here, there was a lot of guys. And I actually, in my book, if you look at the acknowledgements, there's a lot of men that were my bosses and leaders who saw something in me and helped me see it when I didn't see it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm never going to forget that. So I'm not going to be ungrateful to that. So when I heard the first couple of podcasts, you're like, oh, but we love men. And then Keith, right? Like you have Keith on. I was like, yeah, these are my girls. They know that you can love men. You just got to find the right ones. Right. And those are the ones that you focus on.
Amen. We love Keith. We miss Keith.
He sounds amazing. He's just so great. Like I've heard him a couple of times. He sounds like a great dude. I just like him.
He's a great dude. He's a smart dude. He's a funny dude. There's things about him where people are surprised because they don't. Not everybody knows the Keith that we know.
So it's like a revelation as well when he's on there. That's awesome.
Yeah. Some people are like, oh, I've never seen Keith that way, which when you first meet him, you would not.
Yeah. Well, and so here, I wanted to say this to you guys, because I have listened to some of the podcasts, but I think one of you were talking about the fairy hair. I literally practically had to pull my car over and be like, yes, that's it. Find the thing that helps you stand out. It's like, this jives so hard with my message right now, but that's it. What's your fairy hair? What is it? What's what makes you? And like that principle in sales, it'll make you 10, 20, 30, 50 times what you are right now.
That my favorite is.
I had to tell you that.
Thank you. The fairy hair. That's when I was in the hospital and I had fairy hair and everybody wanted to talk to me about my fairy hair and not my broken wrist.
Yes, exactly.
Fairy hair. Hey, it's all good. I think it's time for us to start wrapping up. Rachel, do you want to ask some of the favorite sassy?
Sure. So, Anita, how do you define sexy?
I think sexy is a function of confidence and wanting more. I feel like people that are ambitious and confident, that to me, that's sexy and owning it. I think that's what sexy means to me.
I like wanting more. It's like needing to be satiated.
That's it. Exactly. Insatiable. That's it. That's what I was looking for. Thank you.
And how would you describe a woman your mother warned you about?
A woman, well, so see, again, with a traditional Indian mom, right? A woman my mother would warn me about would have been so simple as somebody who just liked to date rampantly, right? So I guess I'm kind of skewed in that. But I think what I would like to think a woman your mother warned you about is somebody that is going to not support you. I mean, honestly, if I think about it in the negative sense, that's what it would be. But the way that you guys do it, it's like, I don't really think that you're a woman that my mother warned me about. This is the kind of people that I wish I would have had growing up. Right? Like to build that confidence. It took me till I was an adult to get to the point where I had people like you and other people in my group and sisterhood and all this that were able there to help women lift each other up. You guys know Mean Girls in high school and all that stuff. I was lucky, yeah. But it took me till like, what, 10, 15 years to get this. And I think that's the part that's so important in the, and that's why I think this works. So I don't know if I'd say warn me about, but I think it's something women, my mother would have wanted me to get along with.
That's good.
So what's the best advice you've ever been given?
The best advice I've ever been given is don't stop learning. Just don't stop. The minute you stop learning, you got nothing else to give the world and you're not going to get much from the world. So you might as well leave it. So yeah, don't stop learning.
Perfect. And then your last tidbit of advice in a nutshell for women out there listening.
You know, be proud, be ambitious, be fierce, but be gentle and choose kindness, whether that's with men or with other women or whomever. I think the difference between human beings and other animals is that between stimulus and response, you have this moment where you can make a choice. And I say, choose kindness. You know, and as women, I think sometimes trying to be like men and get more successful and stuff, we forget that part, but that's such an important thing for us. And we can go to the moon and back with just using our empathy and our kindness. So don't forget about those things.
Awesome. Those are really great nuggets. Thank you.
Thank you.
If people want to get to know more about you, Anita, or get a copy of your book, by the way, we need a copy of your book.
Hells yeah.
Yeah.
Give me the address, I'll send it to you.
Okay. if people want to get your book, Beat the Bot, or know more about you, what's the best way to do that?
So my website is ldkadvisory.com. So it's L like Larry, D like dog, K like kangaroo, advisory. And then Amazon has the book on it, and you can link to it from my website as well. But those, and I'm on Twitter and I'm on LinkedIn, and I love to connect with like-minded individuals. And I also love to be a mentor to young women who might be listening that you know, need someone to just kind of cheer them up a little bit. So
Awesome. Well, thank you once again, Anita, for being.
Thank you so much.
Being with the women your mother warned you about.
Yeah, I love it.
And you can be part of our sisterhood, a woman your mother said to get along with.
That's it.
And thanks to all of our warners for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. To connect with me directly, you can go to GinaTremarco.com, and from there you can find everything you need to know about Pivot 10 Results and Carolina Improv Company. And for Rachel?
To connect with me, Rachel Pitts, you can find me all over social media as Rachel on Real Estate, and find all of our social media links and free cool downloads on our website at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
And hey, give us a review. We would love a review. This is our ask. We're in sales and we would like a rating and a review in case we haven't mentioned that. And if you go to iTunes and do that, that is super cool. Or you can also do it anywhere else you listen to podcasts, but iTunes seems to be the mothership. And remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant.
And a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Bye, Warners.
Bye, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.